Madhavam Kunjabi Hari Jaya Rala Madhavam Jaya Rala Madhavam Kunjabi Hari Janna Balava Girivara Gari Gopi Janna Balava Girivara Gari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Rava Madhava Kunjabi Hari Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada 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 Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Om Vishnu Pada Paramahamsa Padivajakacharya Sutara Sutara Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrindaki Namacharya Sila Haridas Thakur Ki Vrensi Gohosi Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrindaki Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyamakunda Radhakunda Giri Govardhanki Rangamayaki Charanamayaki Tulasi Devi Maharani Ki Gaura Primanandi All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Hare Krishna, good morning. We are reading from Second Canto, Part 2, Second Canto, Chapter 9, Text 36. Sanskrit, please repeat after me. Etavate vajnasyam.
Etavate vajnasyam.
Tattva jnasunatmanah.
Tattva jnasunatmanah.
an vayavya tire kavyam yatsyat sarvatra sarvada etavate vajnasyam tattvajnasunatmanaha an vayavya tire kavyam yatsyat sarvatra sarvada Etavat, up to this,
eva,
certainly,
jnanasyam,
is to be inquired,
tatva,
the absolute truth,
jnanasuna,
by the student, atmanaha,
of the self,
anvaya, directly, Vyatire kavyam,
indirectly,
yat,
whatever,
syat,
it may be,
sarvatra,
in all space and time,
sarvada,
in all circumstances.
Translation by His Divine Grace, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. A person who is searching after the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, most certainly search for it up to this, in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. Please repeat after me. A person who is searching after the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, most certainly search for it up to this,
in all circumstances,
in all space and time,
and both directly and indirectly.
purport by His divine grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. To unfold the mystery of Bhakti Yoga, as it is explained in the previous verse, is the ultimate stage of all inquiries, or the highest objective for the inquisitive. Okay, now, before we continue, now let's remind ourselves what the last verse was, the translation of text 35. So in other words, Prabhupada is saying that as it is explained in the previous verse, so the verse was, O Brahma, please know.
This is for the website. They need to know who's the speaker.
Please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos, and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created, and at the same time I am outside of everything. Okay, so that was the previous verse. Right? So, very, very dense philosophical text. We will try to elucidate this a little bit in a few minutes, okay? Just have a little patience with me. This is very, very intense philosophy. As Nagaraj Prabhu was saying the other day, he was trying to elucidate some of these texts from the Rupa Goswami's text, and also Ramapad Swami, we heard from him also, and he was very dense philosophical. But I have a little help. I brought a little something, a little trick, which is called the Bansuri flute, and maybe the Bansuri flute will give us a little help to understand these verses. So I'll explain to you in a few minutes. So it says, everyone is searching after self-realization in different ways, by karma yoga, by jnana yoga, by dhyana yoga, by raja yoga, by bhakti yoga, etc. To engage in self-realization is the responsibility of every living entity developing consciousness. One who is developing consciousness certainly makes inquiries into the mystery of the self, of the cosmic situation, and of the problems of life. In all spheres and fields, social, political, economic, cultural, religious, moral, etc., and in their different branches. But here the goal of all such inquiries is explained. Okay, it is explained, so let's find out. The Vedanta Sutra philosophy begins with this inquiry about life, and the Bhagavatam answers such inquiries up to this point, or the mystery of all inquiries. Lord Brahma wanted to be perfectly educated by the personality of Godhead, and here is the answer by the Lord, finished in four nutshell verses, from Aham Eva to this verse, Etavat Eva. Okay, now, wait a second. Let's take a minute to review this, because this is the fourth or the last of the four nutshell verses. So let's remind ourselves from number 33, Aham, Prabhupada said, Aham Eva, see, Aham Eva Sam Eva Gre. Brahma, it is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation, when there was nothing but myself, nor was there the material nature, the cause of this creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead, and after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. Text 34, O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, it is without relation to me. If it is without relation to me, has no reality, know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. Now that was the verse that Ramapad Swami was speaking about last week. And then the text 35, which is read, if, O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created and at the same time I am outside of everything. So now, before we continue with the purport, because the purport gets even more complicated, it's like very hard to really get a grasp on it. So let's try to understand what Prabhupada has said so far up to here, which is he's trying to introduce us to the four nutshell verses. What is he saying? Well, and text number 33 says that it is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation. So prior to this, we had a few classes before that where the devotees were talking about explaining the process of creation. And we also were reading this process of creation from the Chaitanya Charitamrita on Saturdays. In fact, I gave a class here about 2 weeks ago. That was the day of the St. Augustine Ratha Yatra. I guess it would be, about 3 weeks ago. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, CC Madhyam, text 272, and also the Adi Lila, text 58, from 52 to 58, it is clearly explained, and also in the Bhagavatam before these verses, that Lord Krishna expands himself, the first expansion, to his first expansion, which is Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna here on the altar, and Lord Balaram is leaning on Krishna. That's the first expansion. From Lord Balaram, we have the quadruple expansion, Vasudevs, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha. And from Sankarshan, we have the expansion, or Sankarshan extends himself into the Mahavishnu. So Mahavishnu lies on the causal ocean, and from his, while he's lying on the ocean, from his pores, from his skin, he breathes out the universes, right? That's what we have been studying. So he breathes out. And from these universes, from his body, come all the universes of the material creation, what we call the pradana, or the material body. Material ingredients, everything comes out of his body. So that's what Krishna is saying here, that before the creation, it was only he who was existing. And then from that, the expansions come to create variety, to create lila, to create pastimes, to create enjoyment. So when Mahavishnu lies on the causal ocean, he is producing all of these universes. Now, I don't recall the name of this devotee, I'm sorry, but he is connected to the Bhaktivedanta Institute. A physics professor, and he was saying how the, what's his name?
Pracharananda.
Actually, there were a couple of devotees discussing how at the beginning of the creation, the scientists are saying that there was a Big Bang. This word was brought up at least twice that I can remember in the last few classes. A Big Bang. Well, was there a Big Bang? Where did they get this idea from that there was a Big Bang? I personally, when I was in Hawaii, I used to teach for the last 10 years different classes in the high school, and they would give me different assignments, different years, different semesters. One of the assignments that I had was to teach physics, so I taught physics, and one of the things that I had to teach during this class was to show a film. I used to show this film where the scientists put a microphone on a satellite in outer space, and the microphone captured sounds. They captured a hum, something like that. It was a sound that I heard. It's clearly heard on the recording. And I know this very well because I had to teach several periods in this high school, so I had to watch that video many times over. So anyway, I could hear that hum that the scientists have recorded in space. And they claim that these are the echoes of the Big Bang, the echoes of a big sound that happened so many thousands of years ago, millions. Okay, so if I think about that, say, well, the scientists are right that there was a sound. Yes, there was a sound at the beginning of creation. But I don't know if there was some Big Bang that implies there is a sound that is not conscious, that is a sound that is just happens to be, that is just random, that is just the crash. That is like someone was saying, actually another speaker said, it's like a popcorn or pop or a popping kind of sound. And I thought, no, that can be. Because everything that Krishna does is musical. Everything has to come from his musical abilities. Everything is aesthetic. Everything is beautiful. So then I remember, I started thinking about preparing for this class, the teachings from my music guru, Govardhan Singh Sachdev, who was perhaps one of the greatest flautists that ever lived in this planet. It was amazing, a very amazing flautist. He was a very good friend of George Harrison also. And he used to teach in Berkeley. That's where I connected with him, and I studied music. And he was a very great flautist, Bansuri flautist, I mean. Very pure also. He was from a Vaishnava family. And he said, when I first learned how to play the flute, that in order to play classical music, you need to have what we call a drone, a swarpeti, a tampura. The tampura, which is the instruments that Narada Muni plays, right, the tampura. He also plays the vina, the Saraswati vina. But either one. But the tampura is very much used for singing and for accompanying the flute. And the reason why you need to have, he said, to have a tambura is because the tambura is the original sound of the cosmos. In other words, you gotta have a sound against which the flute is played. Because the flute, when you play the flute, you need a reference point. You need like a tapestry of sound where the microtones have a reference. Because if there is no reference, we don't know which microtone we are talking about. Because there are hundreds and thousands of microtones. And what is a microtone? It's a wave, it's a frequency, it's a vibration. And that's what I thought. The sound, the original sound of the universe was a vibration. Mahavishnu is creating are vibrations, frequencies. And we now understand that this is solid in respect to my finger, because my finger is solid, but as we know, there are smaller and more smaller units that different scientists have divided into, or they have created a theory called the atomic theory. So there are atoms. If we divide this wood matter into different smaller pieces, we are going to find that there are even smaller and smaller pieces up to the atom. And now that is still a theoretical model, because now the quantum physicists, especially after Niels Bohr and Heisenberg and Max Planck and all these scientists, they have found out that, well, in quantum physics, actually everything is a vibration. There is a frequency to it. And you can even measure these frequencies. And then maybe you have read It's a Journey to Other Planets, where it starts with these two, when Prabhupada is talking about the matter and antimatter, right? The material energy and the anti-material energy. There are two physicists that found out that there is something even beyond matter called antimatter. And they have found out that there are particles that they don't correspond to the material energy, the atomic energy. So there is something even beyond matter. That's what they are saying. The scientists are saying this. The Prabhupada said, yeah, well, that's what we're talking about. It's an easy journey to other planets. It's a little book which has been my Bible for a long time. So read that and understand that there is a material world, there is also an anti-material world, and everything that you see and that you perceive with your senses is not really what it really is, that there is something beyond this material world, which is also one of the most important points in the Bhagavad Gita, which is that there is a material world, there is anti-material world, material energy, anti-material energy, or spiritual energy. Okay. So, coming back to the sound. So the sound of Mahavishnu is that vibration, the original cause, the original creation of matter. It comes from Mahavishnu in the form of frequencies, vibration, sound. Sound. So now if we're talking about sound, now there are people that have got even farther than that. There are some great theoreticians and philosophers that said that the origin, the cause of the world that we live in is actually music. So music is God, they say. But, okay, if music is God, then we have to bring up to the point that, well, if there is music, there has to be a musician. Someone has to play that music. That is the musician we are talking about here. So what is Krishna doing at this time? Well, Krishna is actually playing on his flute. And what my teacher said is that you need a reference point in order to play the flute. So what the cosmos is doing is creating the tambura, the cosmic om, because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I am the syllable om of the Vedic mantras. Om Krishna Namaha, Om Bala Krishna Namaha, Om Nanda Dulal Namaha, Om Damodara Namaha, Om Govinda Namaha, Om Gopala Namaha, Om Giridhari Namaha, Om Giriraja Namaha, Om Yashodanandana Namaha, Om Nandanandana Namaha, Om Devakinandana Namaha, Om, Om. So, Krishna is playing on his flute. And when he plays on his flute, he is creating I just brought here the Srimad Bhagavatam, part one. Hope you can see this picture, you probably have seen it. Krishna playing on his flute, and then from the sounds of his flute enter Lord Brahma's ear. Okay, so we have from the Brahma Samhita, says, text number 26, Brahma, being desirous of satisfying Govinda, practiced the cultural acts for Krishna in Goloka, Lord of Swetadvip, for a long time. His meditation ran thus, there exists a divine lotus of 1,000 petals, augmented by millions of filaments in the transcendental land of Goloka. On its whorl, there exists a great divine throne on which is seated Sri Krishna, the form of eternal effulgence of transcendental bliss, playing on his divine flute, resonant with the divine sound, with his lotus mouth. His worship by his amorous milkmaids with their respective subjective portions and extensions, and also by his external energy, who stays outside, embodying all mundane qualities. Then Gayatri, mother of the Vedas, being made manifest, imparted by the divine sound of the flute of Sri Krishna, entered into the lotus mouth of Brahma, born from himself, through his 8 ear holes. The lotus-born Brahma, having received the Gayatri, sprang from the flute song of Sri Krishna. The Gayatri sprang from the flute song of Sri Krishna, attained the status of the twice-born, having been initiated by the Supreme Personal Primal Preceptor, Godhead himself. That's text 27 of the Brahma Samhita. I'm sorry, Prabhu, this is very, very intense, but very dense. But let me see if I can explain what happens here. When Krishna is playing on his flute, he's actually creating, he's bringing forward the knowledge of the Vedas, including Vedic music, to Brahma, so that Brahma could have the understanding by which he can actually engineer the creation of the universe. So actually it doesn't come from Brahma, it comes from what Krishna is saying here. It was I who was at the beginning of the creation. And what is he doing? He's playing on his flute. And what is he playing? He's playing melodies, he's playing songs, the song of the divine flute of the Supreme Lord. And that flute, those songs contain all the knowledge of the Vedas. And I'll explain in 1 second, just a second. When Krishna wants to create, let's suppose, or give the information on certain relationships, feelings, and emotions that we call rasa, then he's going to create certain melodies to create that rasa, and he's conveying that by the approach on the different microtones. Like, for instance, the microtones for a very simple raga, which is Alaya Bilawal, is played in the morning around this time. And he plays this raga. So in this raga, which is in the morning, there are two main notes. Now you got to understand that in Indian music, everything is fluid, it's microtonal. There is thousands of microtones in the scale. So there are one of the tones, which is the third. Let me see if I can. I'm talking and trying to listen at the same time. The third, ga, that represents the morning sun. It's not the full sun like the fifth note. So pa is the sun, yellow bright color. Ga is orange color, is the third note. San sa re ga ga, so it's a little bit more subdued than the fifth note. So that's one of the notes that conveys that feeling of morning, the orange color of the sunrise. And then this raga is a bhajan in which Mother Yashoda is asking Krishna to get up and to go and tend the cows. It's time to get up, Krishna, let's go on. And take care of the cows. But then he ends the bhajan saying, oh my darling, he's showing his motherly affection. How is that expressed on the flute? Is by the use of an ornament, or what we call in the West, a blue note, blues, the blues, right? The jazz and blues. So the blue note is like an accidental. And the accidental in this case is on the sixth note, and you play not just half, not just the flat seven, but you gotta play to create the right microtone is a quarter of the flat seven, a quarter of the common E. So the seventh, that feeling of motherly love. So, sorry Prabhupada that I cannot play at my level right now, but my hands are not completely warm and this is a very difficult instrument to play. I usually have to take at least half an hour, 1 hour before I can actually play the music, and I'm just talking and giving you Bhagavatam class. My teacher, he was amazing. He was a purist. He would actually warm up for 2 hours before a concert. I used to produce many of his concerts. And he would sit down with the tabla player and he would play these ragas on the flute for 2 hours to warm up. And then when he was ready, like he was in the zone of the music, he was in another world, he would say, okay, now you can open the doors. After 2 hours of playing, like a full concert just for myself while I was putting the sound system together. Anyway, but the point is that these are very subtle feelings, emotions that Krishna is expressing. Well, now you're going to say, well, what happened about the material elements? What is the flute doing? The flute is creating, that's what my teacher said, is creating variety, sound variety, the birds in the forest, the rain, the ocean, all the sounds are being expressed through the music. And we have a raga like raga megh, M-E-G-H, raga megh, which is the raga that attracts the rain raga. I remember I used to play that in the elementary school and I used to tell the kids, now You see, it's very bright and sunny, but I'm going to play for you a nice little composition that attracts the rain. And invariably, when I played that raga, the rains would come probably 2-3 hours later, and I would come the next day, and I said, hey, you remember how the rains came yesterday? He said, yes, yes, they came. Yeah, there was rain yesterday, because that's the rain raga. It's called Raga Meg. So I'm not going to play today because I'm sure you want a nice sunny day. But anyway, that's... So the rains are attracted by Raga Meg. Actually, literally, Krishna creates the rains with Raga Meg. And so now you're saying, well, what about the sun in the sky? What about the fiery objects? What about the stars? Well, there is a raga, it's called Raga Deepak, which is actually the fire raga, and where Krishna can actually create the sun or fiery objects in the sky by the plane of Raga Deepak. In other words, that he's giving Lord Brahma the knowledge on how to create the sun and the fiery objects by the plane of this raga. And this raga, for instance, there is the story of Tan Sen, who was a singer, very famous singer, who actually passed by singing this raga, attempting to sing the raga, because he burned up, literally. His throat burned up and he passed. So for years, once I found, studying a treaty of Vedic music, I found this raga. I said, oh, this is the famous raga of Tan Sen that creates fire. I said, man, I don't know, is this true? Could it be true that you can create fire with the flute? That doesn't sound right, but maybe we should test it out and see if it works. So sure enough, I start playing Raga Deepak on my flute and I start getting warm. I said, well, how could this be? I'm getting warm. I said, well, I don't want this to happen to me like happened to Tan Sen, so I might as well turn the fans on and have water nearby. So I did, turn the fans on, have water, drank water. And I kept drinking raga. I turned the recording device on, so I recorded some of these. And when I was playing, about maybe 10, 12 minutes into it, I was feeling like really hot. I stopped, this is just a little too dangerous. So I've never taught this raga to any of my students, and I never performed it live, never played anywhere. I just had it in this recording. Beautiful raga. Raga Deepak. And I could see that even myself, when I was playing these tonalities, I was getting warm. Believe it or not, it's not mystical. It is mystical, but it is not an allegory. I'm not talking about something that is not true. This really happened to me, that actually got warm or hot by playing this raga, Raga Deepak. So it is true that there are certain tonalities, certain vibrations that control the fire, that control the sun. There are vibrations that control the rains. That's what Krishna is giving the information with the sound of his flute to Lord Brahma, how to create all of these elements out of material nature. Anyway, this is not a class so much about music. Sorry that I got into this, but it was a Krishna's flute, so you understand that everything really, in a sense, all the knowledge of the universe comes from Krishna's flute, when Krishna's playing his flute. And this is not an allegory. We don't make it up. This is in the Vedas. This is really our belief, not just our belief system, but this is what it is. This is reality, that Krishna's flute is the origin of all the knowledge in the universe, and that's how it comes from, because this is what I studied when I studied what we call classical Indian music, which is actually Vedic music. That's what it is. This is how you get it. Anyway, it's more complicated than that, but this is not a music class, it's a Srimad Bhagavatam class. So the next point is that what he's saying, Krishna's saying, these two verses are very difficult to understand. Text number 33 of the four, the text 33, it is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation, when there was nothing but myself. Nor was there the material nature, the cause of this creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead. And then there is this other verse of the four, which says, text number 35, text 35, it says just the previous verse, O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into this cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created, and at the same time, I am outside of everything. So how are we going to understand that? Well, remember what I just said. All the knowledge of the creation comes from Krishna's flute. Now, how do you create the sound on a flute? It is created by the breath, the breathing process. The breathing process starts here in the diaphragm, especially in Vedic Bansuri music. So the breathing, Krishna is breathing, literally. He's not pushing the air out. That will be a different kind of musical instrument, like a silver flute or a saxophone. That's where you actually push the air out. But in Vedic music, when you play the flute, you breathe with your breath, which comes from the diaphragm. Now listen, Krishna is breathing from the diaphragm, and that air is going through his lungs, is going through his heart, is going through his esophagus, through his throat, through his mouth, through his lips, into the Bansuri flute, and is creating this wonderful sound. So what is this that this knowledge comes from? Comes from his breath, the breath of God. He is in this breath, but he's not this breath. He is a person. He has eyes. He has hands. You understand? He is in the cosmos through his music, but he's not in the cosmos because he's a person sitting down in a jewel throne in Vrindavan playing on his flute. But what is it in the cosmos? His vibration, his music, his knowledge of the Vedas, the Gayatri Mantra that was imparted to Brahma through his flute. I hope you understand what I'm saying. This is what the Vedas say. I'm not trying to make up anything. This is what it is. He is in the cosmos through his music, through his flute, through his breath. He is like when I play the flute. Yes, I play the flute, I use my breath, and the music is out there, but I am not that music. I am Mahesh. I'm right here playing on the flute. Same thing with Krishna. Krishna is playing on his flute. The music is in the cosmos. So he is through his music. That's him. That's his music. That's his personality expressed through that music, but he is in Vrindavan, in Goloka Vrindavan. He's in the cosmos, but out of the cosmos. He is, as it says, text number 35, I myself also exist within everything created, and at the same time, I am outside of everything. Right? Anyway, I try to explain from the musical point of view what these verses are saying, because it's very hard to grasp. I'm really sorry if I didn't express myself better. I tried. So there is. Let's continue here, because there is another part of the purport which I haven't read, and we are running out of time. I'm very sorry. It says that, to finish the purport, because that was the job that Sri Gaurangi told me to do. Supposed to give the second half, page 197. So, men do not know that the ultimate goal of life is Vishnu, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, due to being bewildered by the glaring reflection in the darkness. Now, it would take us another 2 hours to explain that. Ramapad Swami tried to explain it, and he did a very good job, but still there were a lot of questions. Even when we went to that program with Sri Vrindavan's house, people had a lot of questions. So, let me say it again. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, due to being, men who do not know that the ultimate goal of life is Vishnu, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, due to being bewildered by the glaring reflection in the darkness, and as such, everyone is entering into the darkest region of material existence, driven by the uncontrolled senses. So Ramapad Swami was explaining that the other day, by saying that it is actually a metaphor. He said, darkness, or the shadow, the reflection of the shadow, which was the verse that he read, I believe it was text number 34. It says, O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into this cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself exist within everything created, and at the same time, I am outside of everything. And this is the verse that he read. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality, know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. So he was saying that this is just a metaphor. Darkness is a metaphor for what Prabhupada is saying here on the text number 36. It is a metaphor for the uncontrolled senses. The uncontrolled senses. That's what the darkest region is. Maya. What is Maya? Now that comes up, and that would take us a couple hours to explain that, but I'll try to be as quick as I can. So, that uncontrolled senses, which is the Maya, is the darkness. But Maya doesn't come to us as Maya. This is what happened here is that after Krishna creates the universe through the agency of Brahma, as we explained earlier, through his flute, and Mahavishnu breathing his vibrations and the material, the pradana, and so on. So what happens is that the living entities are brought into existence into this material world through the glance of Vishnu, right? As we discussed that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita class. The glance of Vishnu on Durga Devi brings into motion, into existence, into movement, into life, the living entities that need to come to this material world in order to satisfy their desires. And Krishna is creating that space, that universe, so that we can live this dream of independence, of enjoying separate from Krishna. Oh, you want to enjoy separate from Krishna? Sure. Krishna is very merciful. Say, here, there is a world where you can enjoy your senses. You can enjoy as much as you want, as much as you can. Sure, here it is. I created this world. This is how he created it, right? He tells Brahma how to do this, how to do that, how to create the suns, the material energy. And then he puts the entities into the world through this glance, and the glance, as we discussed, was Shambhu, Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is actually a direct appendix or connection, a limb, actually. It's a limb of Vishnu. That's the way it is said in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It is a limb of Vishnu. It's connected to Vishnu. And Shambhu is what creates the living entities coming into this material world. All right. So that darkness of illusory energy, Ramapada Swami was saying, is a metaphor. It's a metaphor for the uncontrolled senses, which is what Prabhupada is saying here right now. Another example we can take from this is that is what. And now, Prabhupada, let me continue on the purport here, because Prabhupada is going to give us the key as to why we would be here, why we would want to remain in this material world, which is full of suffering, is very dangerous, a very dangerous place, this material world. It's not an easy place to live. And it's not a place, it looks like it's easy, and it may be easy for a while. Wait until you get to be 70 or 80 years old or 90 years old or or some other time in your life where you have some pain or headaches or issues with your own health, okay? So it's not really, as Prabhupada said, this is a very dangerous world, and it's not a place for a gentleman. Really, it is not. Because there are the threefold miseries of material life, the miseries created by the demigods, the miseries created by your own body, and the miseries created by other living entities. They're just miseries, whatever you turn. So don't get enamored by the world so much. This material world where we are living here right now is very dangerous, and is you want to get out of here. You don't want to come back. You go to the point where you go to chant Hare Krishna, and this is the crux of the matter. You are here, you are in front of these deities that are beautiful, and they are beautifully attended by the devotees, because Srila Prabhupada came and brought us these teachings of the Vedas, and he was a wonderful, magnanimous personality, that he just came to the United States here, to New York City, and he started the movement many years ago, over 50 years ago, and taught us these principles so that we can figure this out, understand these four nutshell verses, and understand that this is not a place where we want to be. We don't want to be in the material world. We want to get out of here. We want to do some devotional service, understand who we are, and try to figure out what it takes so that we don't take birth again. Please don't come back. Don't come back to the material world. This is not a good place. It's dangerous. So, Prabhupada is saying, the whole material existence has sprung because of sense gratification. Desires based principally on the sex desire. Okay. And the result is that in spite of all advancement of knowledge, the final goal of all activities of the living entities is sense gratification. So why? Because as we explained, we are being hypnotized. We have to be hypnotized to be in this world. I mean, if you see all these miseries and all these frustrations and all these things that you go through in your life, what to speak of if you were living in a place today like Ukraine, or if you were living in a place like Africa, like Liberia, or a place where there is war, or Afghanistan, or Iraq, and some place where there is a strife, you would really see these miseries right in front of your face. But what happened is that we have to explain why we are here. We have to satisfy our senses and say, well, wait a second, you know, I still want to be in this material world. Why? Because of this sex desire. It's like an hypnotic effect that is created by the Maya. Remember, I was talking about how films and the creation are very much connected. Because when you watch a film, you are being hypnotized by that film, which is actually an illusion, because the illusion is that we see a three-dimensional world into a two-dimensional world of a screen, and that's an illusion. All films are false. Everything you watch in a screen is not real. In the same way, in this material world, everything that you perceive, that you think is reality, actually is false. It's an illusion. And how is that created? By two identifications. In a film, the identification of the spectator to the camera, the eye of the camera, you want to be this camera that goes everywhere, that goes through the peephole, that looks on the other side, that flies in the sky. You identify with the camera, and you also identify with the character. In fact, that's the point that I brought up to Chaitanya Charan. You identify with this person that is on the screen, and you want to be like him or like her. You want to be beautiful or rich, or you want to have all these girls that are after you or whatever. You identify with the character. These are the two identifications that create hypnosis in a film. So what happens in the mature world? We are all hypnotized to be here. We would have to be hypnotized. Why would we want to be here instead of being in Goloka Vrindavan? Why? Because of this identification with pradhana, matter, and also with the characters that we are here. I'm American, I'm black, I'm white, I'm Chinese, I'm Spanish. I'm identifying with, I'm a musician, I'm a carpenter, I'm an engineer. I am, I am, I am. This is mine, mine, mine. So me and mine. All these identifications create hypnosis. You become hypnotized and you think that this is what it is. This is like the story that I told about the history of film, where someone, actually the history of film started with Plato in the cave, where there is these people watching their own shadows created by the fire onto the wall of the cave, and they were like totally absorbed looking at these shadows. And someone went outside of the cave and saw the actual real life, the birds, the sun shining, the sunrise, comes back and tells them, hey, by the way, this is not real. What you are watching is not real. The reality is out there is much bigger than what you are seeing. And the people in the cave, they're watching their shadows, say, what are you talking about? This is all there is. There is nothing beyond the shadows. That's the history of film. People watching a film, they think, no, this is the reality. We don't want anything else. And so they think that whatever they are seeing is real, and there are subliminal techniques in order to reinforce that subliminal hypnotic effect. So if you see, watch a film and you see shadows on a film, you see frames on a film, if you see eyeglasses on a film, if there is any reference in the dialogue concerning shadows, then you are double hypnotized. So the same thing, in other words, the same thing in this world, if you see reflections of the shadow, it's more hypnotizing than the shadow itself. If you would see Maya directly, you say, oh, that's Maya. I don't need it. I don't want Maya. But Maya doesn't say, God is Maya. Maya comes as a reflection, always. Always as a reflection. An afterthought. This is a very nice world. Why do you have to worry so much? Why are you rushing chanting Hare Krishna? Why do you have to chant so much? You have time. You are only 60 years old, 50 years old. You have 20 years, 30 years. Why do you want to rush? Just relax. That's Maya. Maya telling you, why you rush? You have a wife? Well, you can have two wives. No, you can have three. Maybe you can have four wives. There was some guy that I was preaching to a long time ago in Hawaii. He was telling me, a man to be, he was actually from a Muslim background. He said, in order to be a real man, you got to have four wives. I said, are you crazy? I have enough trouble having one wife. What to speak of two or three or four? He said, no, a real man has four wives. I said, you're crazy, man. So I stopped talking with him. So people think that they can have three wives, four wives, that they can enjoy their senses all they want. Forget it. You got to understand that this is not the place where you're supposed to be. Why? Because it's not real. Because the body that you think that is so wonderful, that is so great, that can do so many things. Listen, I was 16 years old, 18 years old at one point. I was a basketball player in college. I was very tall. I could jump up and down. I could dunk. I could do all these things. Even up to 10 years ago, I could play with the high school kids in the basketball court. I can do those things now. Why? Because my body is decaying. Your body is not going to be here for very long. It's going to be gone soon. It's not real. So that's what Prabhupada is telling you about. But you think that it is real. Why? Because of that sex desire, that little thing that is telling you, no, you can enjoy yourself. Why are you worried so much? Come on. Okay, so Prabhupada concludes here, but here is the real goal of life, and everyone should know it by inquiries that before, everyone should know it by inquiries put before a bona fide spiritual master, expert in the science of Bhakti Yoga, or from a living personality of Bhagavatam life. Everyone is engaged in various kinds of scriptural inquiries, but the Srimad Bhagavatam gives answer to all of the various students of self-realization. This ultimate objective of life is not to be searched out without great labor or perseverance. So you gotta work hard to do this. It's not like, it's not a free lunch. You gotta work in order to find the answers to the Srimad Bhagavatam. You gotta do penance, and the penance you gotta chant every morning, those 16 rounds. It's not an easy thing, but you have to do it. One who is imbued with such sincere inquiries must ask the bona fide spiritual master in the disciplic succession from Brahmaji, and that is the direction given here. Because the mystery was disclosed before Brahmaji by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the mystery of all such inquiries regarding self-realization must be put before such a spiritual master, who is directly the representative of God, acknowledged in the disciplic succession. Such a bona fide spiritual master is able to clear up the whole thing by evidence from the revealed scriptures, both direct and indirect. Although everyone is free to consult the revealed scriptures in this connection. Now, this is very controversial, so I'm not going to get beyond this, because it would take us probably another 3 hours to discuss, and we are run out of time. Although everyone is free to consult the revealed scriptures in this connection, one still requires the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, and that is the direction of this verse. Prabhupada just said it right there. There has to be a living person that you ask questions And the spiritual master that gives you the answers based on the revealed scriptures, that's one way to think about it. But also, the bona fide spiritual master is the most confidential representative of the Lord, and one must receive direction from the spiritual master in the same spirit that Brahmaji received it from the personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. The bona fide spiritual master in that bona fide chain of the cyclic succession never claims to be the Lord himself, although such a spiritual master is greater than the Lord in the sense that he can deliver the Lord by his personally realized experience. The Lord is not to be found simply by education or by a good, fertile brain, but surely he can be found by the sincere student through the transparent medium of the bona fide spiritual master. And Prabhupada is saying that the spiritual master has to be here in front of you, among other things, because the spiritual master has different jobs. He's checking on his devotees, you know, it's like, as we all know, Prabhupada was very, very concerned for his disciples, wanted to know where they were, how they were doing, wanted to make sure that they were taken care of. But as Prabhupada said, it's not like we can just read the books and understand these things. You actually do need a spiritual master. That brings me to the point, and I'll finish the class here with the words from my good friend and spiritual mentor who passed away a few years ago, Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, who said that it was a personal conversation that I had with him, where he said that you actually, 99.9999% of the population of the devotees, they do actually need a person that is guiding them to Krishna. That is the job of the bona fide spiritual master that Srila Prabhupada is talking about here. There has to be a living person that gives you these instructions that are in the Vedas, the four nutshell verses that we read. Somebody has to explain them to you in a clear way so you understand who you are, where you come from, where you're going, and the importance of the emergency to leave this material world, which is very dangerous, and we need to get out of here. So that's what he said. Yeah, if you don't have a bona fide spiritual master in front of you that gives you the answers, then you are going to find those answers, yes, but at what cost? At the cost of a lot of pain. And it's not recommended in the Vedas. It's not recommended anywhere. It's not our sampradaya. Our sampradaya is that you got to approach a spiritual master or at least advanced devotees that can give you information on how to get out of this material world. It's not an easy thing. It's a very difficult matter. And if somebody becomes a guru or a teacher, well, all glories to them. That's a very, very difficult job, very difficult thing to do. To actually guide someone from the material world to the spiritual world, gee, that's very difficult. Extraordinary. So anyway, that's as far as they wanted me to go here. We are going to be studying this verse for the next 10 days. I just wanted to give you an introduction. So thank you for listening. Are there any questions or comments? Sorry that we run out of time, but go ahead. Ask question. In the back there.
Thank you, Prabhu. Very nice class. You touch on many nice areas, but of course that part with song, that's interesting. But from song comes like taste, touch, form, you know, like that. Interesting, yeah, yeah. And the earlier you had said that one devotee was mentioning about Big Bang, but that Big Bang is just a theory. Actually, it's a speculation. You know, it's not the origin of the universe, really. I mean, that's the atheistic scientists, you know, have to come up with some idea to support the atheist version. So they come up with that Big Bang, and they're talking about microwave, background microwave radiation as proof. You know,
well, what... there is a sound, but we agree that there is a sound. They're hearing a sound. The scientists are saying, well, we just recorded the sound, and we believe it's the echo of some primordial sound. We agree, yeah, there is a sound. There is not some Big Bang that is random, that is chaotic, that it came out of nowhere. Right. What we're saying is that according to the Vedas, it's a sound that is orchestrated. It's a symphony. It's a beautiful sound.
I just read a little story about Srila Prabhupada that in a room conversation, and I believe it was Tamal Krishna, asked Srila Prabhupada the question about, you know, if your books are non-different from you, you know, why do we have to hear from you? And Srila Prabhupada reached over and twisted his ear and said, because my books cannot do this.
Exactly, exactly. That's right, that's right. Only a spiritual teacher is going to say, oh, what were you doing on Friday night? Or how come your wife is complaining to me that you are not at home on certain days? Or, right, it's like somebody has to watch over you, make sure that you are doing your job. Or you got to be in touch with him, and you got to ask questions, you got to have inquiries. Somebody has to twist your ear.
Oh, very nice class, thank you. I was wondering, how do you reconcile with this third canto, 26 chapter, 32 verse, where Prabhupada talks about the creation details, not bringing Brahma Samhita. But he said that when tasmat cha bikur banat bhagavat birja chodita, when egoism in ignorance is agitated by the sex energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the subtle element sound is manifested. And from the sound come ethereal sky and the sense of hearing and then the big purport. I'll just read few from the purport. In the material world, we manufacture many things for our material comfort simply by hearing. They are already there, but just by hearing one can transform them. If we want to build a very skyscraper, this doesn't mean that we have to create it. The material for the skyscraper, wood, metal, earth, etc., are already there. But we make our intimate relationship with those already created material elements by hearing how to utilize them. Anyway, Prabhupada purport goes on. And then Prabhupada writes, by hearing only, one can proper use of that which already exists. The principle of hearing to properly utilize preconceived materials is applicable to spiritual paraphernalia as well. We must hear from the proper spiritual source, which you also depicted. But again, in the middle, third purport, Prabhupada writes, from sound everything began, and by sound, material existence also ends. So here the sound is not necessarily from the flute of the Lord, but it is from the sex energy of the Lord that the material sound.
Yeah, well, we got to understand, Krishna is playing the flute in Goloka Vrindavan, and that's a spiritual pure sound. That's the true reality of things. Now, once the creation starts to create motion, or is put into motion by the Supreme Lord, and the Vedas are revealed, as we describe, to Lord Brahma, and Brahma is creating the universe. Now, there are other sounds that are coming from there. Now, the sound is only a sound if there is hearing, somebody's hearing that sound. But that sound is after the material creation has been put into motion. I think that's what that verse is referring to. In other words, that the listener is right after that material energy has been put into motion. Not in Goloka Vrindavan, where Krishna is playing on his flute and imparting the knowledge of the Vedas to Brahmaji. So there is two kinds of sound here. There is the pure sound of Krishna's flute in Goloka Vrindavan, and then there is the sound which is after he already gave the information to Brahmaji, and Brahmaji kind of constructs the universe. And now there are certain sounds, they could even be musical sounds, that are created after that, but that would be more within the cosmos that has already been created. Right? Like, yes. If I make a sound here, well, this is after the cosmos has been created. This table was already built, and I'm just making a sound out of it. But in order for this to be created, there has to be knowledge, there has to be a point in creation where Brahma had to understand how to create wood, how to create the rain or the different material elements that create the wood. That's before actually the creation. Then the creation happens, and then there is sound after the creation is put into motion. And that's, I think, what Prabhupada is talking about there. But I don't know beyond that. I would have to study the verse.
In the Bhagavad Gita, it says, it is understood from this verse by agitation of the elements of egoism and ignorance. It's very important. We repeat this meant
again and again. Egoism in ignorance.
The
fasting produced was sound. Fasting was produced from sound. This egoism in ignorance, which is the subtle form of ether.
Right.
So from sound comes ether, and then all the touch and other. This is not from the flute. It's
from because sound is the most subtle of all the elements. Ether is the most subtle of all the elements, and sound comes from the ethers. That's right. Sound comes from, but that, now you are from that point of view that
from sound comes ether.
From sound comes ether, yeah, but that's a material element already, right? But Krishna, the only thing he's doing is giving the information to Brahma on how to create the universe. So Brahma now is creating all the universes by the knowledge he's getting from the flute that he's hearing. And now the universes are creating from that combination of egotism and sex desire and so on, and everything is put into motion. Are you satisfied with that answer? In other words, it doesn't have anything to do with Krishna's
flute.
Let's think about that.
Because Bhagavatam very clearly, because if we do not address the false ego, then we will never find the solution. It is not all spiritual. The material world is not spiritual. Krishna says 7.4, this boom, earth, air, ether, fire, water, these are all material elements.
Yeah, and the false ego is our own desire to enjoy separately
from Krishna. Yeah, so false ego, Prabhupada addressing here very heavily. And that's how the Bhagavatam says.
Okay. That will be another verse. I think we have enough verses here. It was intense. So thank you very much, Prabhupada.